basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-point stripe.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away.
Giants for the win. James puts up the three. Oh, it's good!
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in! With 5 tenths of a second remaining!
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, and good to be back. And today, I have a special guest. Got Darius coming back tomorrow. But over the weekend, the Lakers signed Matisse Thybulle. And I suspect that'll be the second to last move the Lakers make if they do, in fact, get that starting forward. And regardless of who that forward is, I think the Lakers are kind of close to the final team that they're going to have. And so joining me today is Lakers reporter and analyst for Silver Screen and Roll and Offside, co-host of the Lakers Detailed podcast, Raj Chapalu. Raj, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, doing well. We are in the kind of almost the dog days of the summer after Summer League. There's this long break before we get any actual real basketball. So getting prepared for that, we got all these new guys to kind of dive into. So kind of excited to dive into that.
Yes, sir. It's funny on that front. You know, I'm like, oh, I want LeBron to make his decision and kind of get the offseason over with. But now I'm sort of like, I think we're going to have a little more news between now and August than we normally do. So like, let's extend it out a little bit. Those dog days can be tough. But today we're going to talk big picture, Raj, about like, what are the Lakers going for? What do you think they were trying to do over the course of this summer? I think that's super important for us as analysts. Like, we always get asked, what do you think? What do you want the Lakers to do? And, you know, if it were me, we'd be running this defense or this, you know, set and things like that. But before any of that, I think it's way more interesting to understand what the team is trying to do and then kind of go from there. So with all of the moves, this has been an era change for the Lakers with LeBron headed out, a bunch of new players coming in. What are some of the things that you think the Lakers were going for in the first place?
Yeah, it's funny because you get all these offseason grades, right, that are starting to come out, and the Lakers maybe have the most polarizing one. Some people give them A's, some people give them C's or D's. I always thought the most important part of this offseason was getting the one position locked down and preferably the center. They were able to do that. But just if you look at the rest of the roster moves, Pete, Austin Reeves, it was funny. I think he was asked about this and he was saying, am I still the oldest player on the roster, right? And someone mentioned that Kevon Looney is actually the oldest player on the roster. But even taking out or including Looney in this, they've decided and opted to go younger. That was very clearly one of the things, that the shifts that they wanted to make here. LeBron leaves, obviously, and you have even Smart, who's, you know, not old, but 30 years old, kind of walks out of the door. All these other guys are 24 to 27 years old. And the rest of them are athletes. And I think that's one of the main things they wanted to go after. Obviously, reported they're after Kuminga as well. We'll see if that materializes. But all the other guys, Thybulle, Zaire, you know, Zaire Williams, all those players are kind of these younger athletes that they're really going for to pair with, obviously, Luka and Austin as the main backcourt, Walker Kessler as a defensive guy. And then just everyone else is a hound on the defensive end, even Adu Thierro, who we'll see if he plays, Cameron Carr, an athlete. And I think that's really what they were going for, some youth athleticism. That's obviously the identity that they wanted around Luka, preferably if they can shoot as well. But even putting that to the side, Grimes, even I think, can be a hound on the defensive end. And I think that was kind of the shift. We'll see if that works, but at least this shift towards, we're going to be young, we're going to be athletic, and try to really be a team that, you know, can go hard in the regular season. And we'll see if that works.
No, I think you're spot on with that. And one of the reasons I always say it's important to listen to the postseason press conferences and whenever Pelinka gets behind the mic is, for all of the bluster and obfuscation that there can be and what the Lakers' plans are, there's actually a decent number of times where if you just listen to those, they'll tell you ahead of time what they end up doing. And in their postseason presser, that was a lot of the emphasis, was that youth and athleticism and depth. And I think that that was really what they ended up achieving. Now, we'll see the results of that. And I kick that idea to you of, okay, if that was the plan, what do you think are some of the upsides and downsides of going that route?
Yeah, I think the upside is you do get a lot more athleticism. I do think you got a lot younger. And I think some of these guys still, you know, you're unsure how proven they are, how healthy they are, right? I think that's the main question with Thybulle is, Like, can he play it? I think that's the whole reason you got him for the minimum. I do think you lost a little bit of experience. I mean, I would have loved to keep Smart. Even a guy like Kennard, I would have loved to keep. But it was clear they were kind of, again, going in a different direction. They wanted athleticism and, you know, kind of a little bit more youth around these guys. And we'll see if the shooting kind of keeps up as well. I think that's one of the concerns, is that the Lakers have enough shooting on the roster? Is there enough three-point shooting to space around Luka and Austin? And do they go to just, this is just a heavy pick and roll team? I think a lot of the ball handling as well is on those two guys. Everyone else is kind of a spacing 3-and-D guy, aside from maybe Colin Sexton, who will be the backup point guard. But everyone else is really relying on those two guys to kind of be the shot creators. I think that's one of the maybe downsides of this build. But Pete, I'm for it. I always thought they needed to go a little bit younger. They need more youth. They needed a team that can really attack the regular season. I feel like even a guy like Smart, they kind of try to pace him through the regular season. I think they wanted a team where, hey, we're just going to go completely into the younger side. We want a lot more athletes. We want guys that can really surround Luka and Austin, maybe protect them defensively. And then you go get, in my opinion, one of the best rim protectors, defensive guys, in Walker Kessler. I do think there's some, you know, how switchable is he in terms of these type of teams. But I like the build, and I like that they've gone for an identity, right? There seems to be some cohesion throughout the roster. There seems to be some forward thinking in terms of what they were going for. Even a guy like Kuminga, he's very polarizing, but I think you can understand the fit perspective of, hey, this is a guy that has a lot of the athletic tools that we're looking for. Let's see it. And I think we can plug him into the system that we're going for. So I like the roster. I'm higher on kind of the roster than I think a lot of people are. I have some questions on some of the players they brought in, but I like the identity, at least the shift that they're moving towards.
Very much so. And I think a lot of times with role players, especially as they sign, of course, we're always going to talk like, what do you think about Matisse Thybulle specifically? Yeah. We'll talk a little bit more about him in a bit. But when you zoom out after the dust is all settled, a lot of times the role players are a part of a bigger whole that they're trying to create. And if you can get kind of similar players, you can create a broader effect that's greater than the sum of its parts. And so we'll talk about this in a moment, but between Matisse and Zaire Williams, then the offensive rebounding of Kessler and Looney, I think there's a big possession battle story that I look forward to talking to you about. But I also think that the depth of this roster, all the way up, maybe even to 15, if you're depending on how bullish you are on Bronny's development, of I don't mind if that guy's playing in the game. Like, you can put that play. Like, Vando might be our 13th man on the roster right now. And
yeah,
Vando is totally playable in regular season games. And you kept bringing up that idea of them being geared toward the regular season. And I agree with that, which has an implication of questions about the playoffs for sure. But I think that the Lakers are totally set to attack the regular season in ways that they haven't been able to when your leader, and if you've got LeBron on your team, LeBron is going to be the leader of your team. I very much believe this. LeBron had to pace himself. In more ways than ever, it's become a very long preseason for LeBron at this point of his career, that if your leader is in that boat, it's hard for the whole team to sort of galvanize, and every game's super important. I'm excited about that aspect of it, of every night, and even with all the injuries that there can be. But because between Matisse, Zaire, a lot of these guys have those, they played 50 games last year, 30 in Matisse's case, and all of that. The Lakers, I think, learned that lesson the last couple of years of, yeah, you can make all of these plans of this is my rotation in the offseason. But you remember Redick last year being like, I used it like 5 times over the course of the year, right? So that idea of depth and attacking the regular season, I'm super excited about that. Let's go to break here. I want to come back and talk about the possession battle.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE,
and I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
So the idea of getting as many possessions as possible has become more and more of an emphasis over the last few years. I want to say 2-3 years ago, we started hearing about more and more coaches talking about corner crashing, for example. That was not something that you heard in the basketball lexicon a whole ton before that. And now it's like, hey, when that shot goes up from three, we're going to go crash the boards and dive from the corners and try to get that offensive rebound. And again, if you look at Matisse, his two steals in 16 minutes a game is bonkers, right? Gets a ton of deflections as well. Blocks a decent number of shots too, 3% block rate. And Zaire, same type of guy, is going to get, you know, a steal and a half in 20 minutes a game type of thing. And will block an unusual number of jumpers. Cameron Carr, same type of thing. We saw Adu, his ability to be disruptive on the perimeter. And like, there's a level of defensive playmaking that I think in the Lakers' defensive scheme, you know, they got all the peel-off switching the last couple of years. I do think we'll drop more, and there's a level of scheme versatility that Kessler allows. But at the end of the day, I do think that getting charges, forcing steals, getting out and running is sort of the concept that they're going for, that even guys like Vando and Jake play into this as well. And so that's one of the first places my mind goes of that possession battle. And it's much more aligned with sort of the trends around the NBA than the teams of the last couple of years. So what are your thoughts on that, on the Lakers, I think, really making an emphasis to win that part of the game?
Yeah, it's funny going and watching all of Matisse's steals, like at least from last season. A lot of them happen in the backcourt, where he's really kind of preying on teams being relaxed and making mistakes. And he still gets a few, you know, in the front court as well. But I just thought that's interesting, where he's a guy that's kind of waiting in the wings for, you know, you to be relaxed. And he has really good hands and instincts with that. But yeah, I think overall, being a team that's attacking on the defensive end, right, being a predator defensively, I thought a lot of times last season, at least, we were very much, and defense is already a reactionary position, but just even besides that, I thought we were very much in a kind of defensive position, you know, where we're just kind of waiting for the offense to attack. Just don't hurt us type of defense. You know, I thought that was kind of the position we're in. And yeah, you're right. I think this roster is really set up where this can be an attacking defense. Even Adu, I'm really excited for that. I'd love to see an Adu Matisse. It might, you know, pull JJ's hair out, but I just love to see it in terms of just pairing athletes together, you know, whether it's with Cameron Carr or Zaire Williams. Adu has a very much a attacking mentality defensively, and there's that needs to be controlled and harnessed, right? I think even with the type of defense they might run in terms of the risk reward of going for steals and things like that. And I think Matisse falls into that as well, where sometimes he can really try to make the home run, steal and get lost defensively, lose his man. But other than that, I like the switch. I think a lot of this also will depend on Luka and Austin's defense as well, right? I think those are the two guys that will be the entry point for almost 99% of people's offenses, where they're going for. But overall, in terms of the scheme wise, I think it will be drop coverage. It will be with how they're based and how they're playing. But again, I love the athletes that we paired. You mentioned Vando. I feel like Matisse is like a Vando replacement, is how I read that signing pretty much. You always talk about how reputation doesn't really catch up to reality. Matisse has been a 40% three-point shooter for the last few years. Doesn't take a ton, but just the gap between that and Vando, I think that just leans more towards he may play over him. And, you know, all these other athletes that we signed. And I'm hoping this youth movement, Pete, is real. You know, we haven't really talked about them, but the two-way guys I'm very excited about. They just got agreed to Kaluma the other day. Chris Mannion, I've been kind of pining for to play for a while. And we'll see with the others guys. But I just like the youth movement that they're kind of moving towards. And again, this move towards we're going to attack the regular season. You're right. Is there a ceiling on that playoff-wise? Probably. I just never thought you were catching OKC and San Antonio from a roster on paper-wise this summer anyway. Get Luka and Austin to the second round or something like that and you know, give them a puncher's chance. But regular season-wise, I like the kind of identity and shift that they're going for. And I think you're right. There's a possession battle. Walker Kessler fits into this as well. Mm-hmm. An awesome offensive rebounder, right? Just creating more possessions and opportunities for those guys.
And that's even when Looney plays, he's one of the elite guys in the league at getting offensive rebounds as well. So that's right in line with that. And then defensively, I think that's where Redick has done some of his best work. Post Anthony Davis had pretty weird roster at the five spot after they acquired Luka. And one of the core challenges that he's faced that I think the Lakers are better at this, but not good at this relative to their OKC and San Antonio specifically, is that idea of point of attack defense, which is, can you guard on the perimeter, keep that guy in front of you? And this is something I face as a coach, where you and I were talking, small world, you played in the same league that I coached in back in the day. And one of the things that I found, I was like, we can't really stay in front of guys. And it's very easy to be that, okay, we're going to get back on our heels. We're going to condense the paint, play a zone defense, and y'all shoot jumpers because you're better athletes than us. And we're going to try to keep you out of the paint. But whenever you're passive like that defensively, it sort of goes against the heart of what a good defense can be. what I found is actually being more aggressive and building in the, like, yeah, they're going to beat you off of the dribble, but make sure they beat you going left. If you've got that disadvantage, you can at least influence which direction they beat you in. And if you do your job, there's somebody next to you who's going to help you out, and then you cover for them and, you know, help the helper type of principles that I actually learned that turning up the defensive intensity when we couldn't guard straight up, that was actually the way out. And I think that Redick has done something comparable defensively in that way. So I'm looking forward to that. Like, do you anticipate, I'm curious, like, one of the things I'm excited about with Kessler is, again, that scheme versatility. I think we could be a really good zone defensive team this year. But how do you view switching within this? Like, that, I don't think the Lakers are totally going to change their stripes on defense.
I don't think so either. It was funny. I remember there was a game on Christmas against the Rockets, right? And the Lakers switched pretty much every screen, and Kevin Durant, you know, predictably torched us. And then next game, I went pregame to ask JJ Redick, why were you switching so much? And he wasn't a fan of the question. And so pretty much responded by, we don't show, right? He said only like three or four teams in the league show. It's basically saying, like, this is the scheme that we run, and we're living and dying with it. So I'm with you. I think a lot of it, they'll still keep the switching. And I thought they switched a little too much, you know, last season, especially with the Luka Austin kind of lineups. I thought a lot of that was letting those guys out to dry a little bit. And there's some defensive accountability for those guys as well, for sure. But I thought it was a little bit too much kind of living in that scheme. I'd love to, again, they throw a lot of zone looks in summer league as well. I think the zone is just a defensive principle of the organization. I think they like to go to that. You mentioned JJ has gone to that as well. But I think this team gives you some different opportunities with that. We'll see how good a defender Mamu is. I'm predicting he's going to play some small ball five. I just cannot imagine Kevon Looney is relied on in any realistic way. I watched him play last season and just does not look like a guy that should be in a real rotation. So I'm predicting some small ball, which I think lends to more switching. Right. Again, I think you have some athletes here where you can take advantage of the defensive personnel you have. Right. I think you've talked about this, where if you put an athletic defender and just keep them in this like switching scheme or blitzing, you really take away what they do best. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to kind of give these athletes opportunity to do what they do best. A guy like Adu Thiero, I'd love for him to be attacker, a predator on defense, a guy that's not in a passive position. I think you want to take advantage of that. So guys like him, Thybul, we'll see what Zaire Williams, Grimes and all those guys. But I think that's what they're going for. Be a little bit more aggressive on that end, be a team that can create turnovers, get out and transition, and play out of that and kind of take advantage of their youth and athleticism.
One thing that's important within that the Lakers haven't had much of the last couple of seasons is, if you're going to switch a decent amount, having shot blocking at positions other than the five. And so that's where Cameron Carr and Adu Thiero really stand out to me. Matisse will get some blocks as well. Zaire will block some shots. That I think the Lakers have more of that on this year's roster. And speaking of summer league, we just wrapped that up. Sadly, Lakers fell in the semis, but lots of exciting stuff. Like you said, Arthur Kaluma signed a two-way yesterday. So let's go to break here. Want to come back and get your thoughts on the minor league portion of the Lakers organization. So Raj, one of the great parts of your coverage is not only do you provide some of the absolute best Lakers coverage, super in detail, what's going on the court, but you're really plugged into the development parts of the roster. You go to the South Bay games, you really know that roster well. A guy like Kaluma is not somebody who just showed up on your radar over the course of the last couple of weeks. And I could not help but watch that summer league team that was largely built on South Bay guys. Three of the starters ended up being Anton Watson, who I think really stabilized the five spot, despite not a great game in the semis. Kaluma and Mannion, that was sort of the basis of what I thought was a really organized summer league roster, despite only having, aside from Zaire Smith years and years ago, just one first round pick. It was Cameron Carr, who was a late first round pick. They looked really good for a team like that. So I just love your thoughts on now the Coachella Valley Lakers, on their move out, on their development, on Zach Guthrie being promoted, the vacancy at the head coach position at South Bay now, just wherever you want to go with that.
Yeah, happy for Guthrie. I thought he did a great job with South Bay. He was handed, I think, a really tough situation, right? He was handed the Bronny situation on a plate, and it's a tough thing to maneuver, as a tough thing to kind of to kind of take control of it. I thought he did a nice job. And look, I think Bronny developed pretty nicely under kind of that tutelage and the kind of development that he was working on. But yeah, South Bay, I thought there was a lot of guys that showed. I think they, you know, we'll see how NBA rotation level they are. But a lot of guys, I think, deserved a shot. Again, I thought Mannion, there's some circumstances last year, I think, with the roster and things like that. But I was saying, hey, I would love to give this guy a shot and give them a chance. We really needed defense.
What do you see in Mannion? Because you have been advocating for him for a while. What is it?
So he made first team all defense last year in the G League, and I understand like competition in G League is what it is. We had such a need for, you mentioned the point of attack defense, like a guy who can kind of disrupt playmakers and ball handlers. And Jordan Goodwin is now in the NBA, and I think he's settled in the league. And I've been saying, look, Manuel's better than Goodwin in that stuff, but Goodwin understands the blender better. He's more of an offensive guy, but Mannion is ahead of him in terms of deflection, steal, stocks, like all those kind of things that really matter when you're plugging a guy in and say, hey, just be disruptive. And you know, it's funny, it was cool seeing other fans learn how much of a irritator he is, how he gets under people's skins. And that is not, you know, that is not a one-time occasion. That is nightly. Mannion really annoys other teams, because if you don't screen him like correctly, he will come around and poke the ball out. Right. And he's very annoying in that way to play, where it's just constant disruption. And I think he has really awesome hands. Like, the 3-point shooting has to come around. The form looks good enough to me, where I think he shot 33%, you know, the G League last year. That has to go up. He was taking one leg fadeaways, which won't happen in the NBA. I think, you know, he talked about just showing an offensive game. Not really, again, a guy you want to run pick and rolls, but in the context of what the Lakers are, where playmaking and ball handling and shot creation is so indexed for, Pete, right? Like, Luka and Oster are going to eat that volume up, where the other players, I don't really need to look for that in a prospect, right? You need to be able to survive offensively. You need to understand the blender, understand how to kick out, take advantage of, you know, compromised defenses. But I think Mannion fits in terms of, hey, he can go in, collect a couple steals, collect a couple stocks, right? You talk about getting blocks at other positions. Mannion's one of the best shot-blocking guards in the G League. That's where I'd love to see us kind of reward that with minutes and an opportunity. And this is, you know, this is his second straight year on a two-way. I just don't think he'll be on a two-way long, whether that's here or somewhere else. I doubt he wants to stay on that for another season. So that's kind of my pitch to get Mannion a shot. I'm not saying he's going to be in the eighth or ninth man in rotation, but I think it's nice to have, hey, this guy's really good at this part of basketball, and it's something this team is kind of really needing. There's a nice void for that, and I think there's some fit, there's some synergy there in need in terms of player and team.
And we were just talking about how a lot of the perimeter concept of this team is to be a playmaker. You were talking about having offensive playmaking locked up.
Yeah.
Mannion brings that in spades on the defensive end with his stocks and deflections, and you combine that with all of the other guys that are super talented at that, that even if the Lakers face injuries over the course of the season, I think there is a next man up, and then the third stringer type of guy is still very, very good at this and will allow the Lakers, I think, to play the same type of style every night. Whereas, you know, last year, for example, on the offensive end, going from main ball handlers being Austin, Luka, LeBron, and then Nick Smith Jr. is the next guy up. There's just such a drop-off, right, in terms of the quality that you get at that. Defensively, I think the Lakers have just an army of guys that can do that. But one guy who's a little less defensively tilted, although I did like him on this end, but it was really his offense that impressed it, was Arthur Kaluma. Again, somebody who played with South Bay last year and is kind of an analytics darling, like in college, at South Bay. I know he performed very well in that respect, but what did your eye test tell you from Kaluma last year and over the course of this summer league?
Yeah, it's strange. He's a guy that I'm kind of unsure why he's bounced around so much. I'm guessing it's because he's 24 years old, so he's very much settled into his NBA body, right? There's not really an upside play for him. But, you know, I think he's just a very solid wing. Summer league to me, and the G League fits this as well. It's why, in my opinion, Mannion stands out. G League is a tough place to kind of analyze defense, right? It is not a place where defense is rewarded. It's very much a guards league. You know, centers will tell you that all day. It's a league really tilted towards, you know, the success of guards. But I think Kaluma just feels, again, you have to see it in more of a professional context, but feels like just a modern wing, Pete. Like, and defensively, we'll see how he stands up. I thought he had some nice switch possessions. He had some crazy blocks. as well. But the three-pointer looks, I think he shot 50% from three in summer league. Looks like he can get that off pretty consistently, even contested, has some step back ones. Again, just contextually looking for guys who can fill this 3-and-D role, and feels like an athletic wing with a really nice three-point shot. Showed some handle as well. The Naz Reid comps are funny. Obviously not as tall as Naz Reid, but you watch him play, the mannerisms feel very similar. The the way he attacked closeouts, very much in the same way as Naz Reid, right? These like has large lumbering kind of drives to the rim, had some nice contested finishes at the basket. Mm-hmm. I like him a lot. Again, I thought it was very clear he was on the two-way. You know, Peter Suter obviously did not show enough to kind of keep that spot, so I'm guessing he'll be the one that's dropped. But I think this is the point of two ways, right? Like, I think the last few years we had some two-way guys that clearly were never going to play. It was They were kind of more geared towards playing in South Bay, which, you know, makes some sense. But all the two-way guys for now, I feel like, can at least be serviceable, you know, at minutes. So, you know, we'll see with Okereke, but at least with Kaluma and Mannion, I feel like both of those guys kind of fit also the identity of the team of what they're looking for. I thought Kaluma was awesome, one of the best players on the summer league roster.
Super fun, and I'm so excited that they're sort of building out this class of player within the minor leagues of the Lakers, because if any of these guys hit, it's going to be a real benefit to the organization overall. And I love the point about the two ways being a lot more geared toward the parent roster. That's one of the many, you know, not having your GM and the head of your G League team really being on the same page. It's one of the manifestations of that. And so, Raj, like I said, we're, I think, pretty close to the end of this offseason for the Lakers. I would like to see them make one more move, but kind of where are you at on that? Like, what is the finishing touch to put on this team?
Yeah, again, the goal I always thought this summer was, all right, get that one position locked, preferably the center, and then kind of fill out with younger players. I like the roster overall. I do think a backup center is still needed. Again, I just don't trust Kevon Looney in that position. It was reported that he believes there's a minutes void, and there is. I just don't think that's the guy to fill it. So I'd love a backup center. And then, you know, the starting kind of forward is still in flux, in conversations. We'll see where they go with that. That's Kuminga, a trade for PJ Washington or something like that. I think those two are still the void that they need to fill. We'll see who they go and get for that. But overall, like, I like the kind of structure of the roster. There's a clear plan. There's a clear cohesion between the guys who make decisions, and, you know, Luka is reportedly involved in all these decisions, which makes a lot of sense. Reportedly, this was the plan whenever they talked about this in 2026 when they had free agency this summer. So I like a lot of the moves. They used all their cap space. They used the first round picks as they were supposed to. Mm-hmm. So I have one swap left. And again, I really hope, like, this is a plan to get the young guys in. I think Cameron Carr, we haven't really talked about him, but
yeah,
Pete, I'm excited for him to play. It's very rare to me where in summer league, a guy that averages, I think he averaged over 18 a game. I think it's 20 if you take out the 5-point game where he didn't play the second half, but it's very few times where a 20-point a game scorer plays the exact same role that he'll play in the parent team.
Yes.
That is very rare. All these other guys, even Darren Peterson, right? He's going to share with Keontae George. AJ DiMonza will have Trey Young asking for the ball. Like, this is just, like, most 20-point guys in summer league will not be a guy like Cameron Carr, who just pretty much coming off pin downs, wide pin downs. Like, all these are off-ball actions, I think, that he will eat the exact same way with the stars next to him, you know, and with the parent team. So I'm really excited for him. He has to physically stand up. And if you ever talk to him, every time you ask him a question, he says, I'm going to live in the weight room. And I believe him. Seems like a guy that really understands his opportunity and position. But other than that, that's one of the prettiest jump shot forms I've seen. I remember you talked about how Tim Legler even was raving about his jumper, who was a shooter in the league. So I'm excited to see that kind of play out and kind of give those guys a shot. We were talking, you know, about Adu Thiero and how he's kind of hard to pin his role of what he is. But another guy, and I love the synergy between Adu and Cameron Carr. I just liked how they really understood they were the leaders of that team in terms of best players, and really played that out, and whether that played out in pick and rolls or whatever. But another guy that just really harnessed Adu being the best athlete on the team and used that in the regular season in which ways you can. So I'm excited for the roster. Again, they still have holes to fill. They know that, and there's conversations going around. But overall, I've liked the identity that they've geared toward.
One last question for you, follow up on the backup five type of spot, because I agree with you. And along with the backup five spot, like, in a perfect world, I think that's the greatest single point of failure on the roster is like if Kessler gets hurt and is out for a little bit, that's the number one, like, oh, crap, we don't really have anybody to replace you in any meaningful way. Whereas I do think at other positions, like there's another player that can step forward and might not be as good, but will be able to sort of cover temporarily while that guy's getting back. Do you have any names or at the very least, like what you're looking for out of that player?
Yeah, I'd like some. Obviously, you're not going to find another Walker Kessler, but I'd love to kind of keep some similar things where when he goes off the court, you're not playing a completely different brand of basketball, right? I'd love to kind of keep some synergy of the style of play. I'm not saying you shouldn't, you know, kind of have some versatility there. I think Mamu brings that already in the spacing five. Walker Kessler has talked about shooting threes, which I think is interesting. Didn't see that coming really, but... I don't know if this is possible. I know there were, or at least it was reported, there were conversations like Daniel Gafford makes a lot of money, but that's the kind of talent at least I'm looking for as we have a two-headed center monster. Like Gafford's not a perfect player, but synergy with Luka already very much a, I'm going to do my job and I'm going to do that nightly. I'm going to catch lobs, play defense. I will never ask for a post touch. I'm never going to ask for an offensive role in that way. That's kind of the guy that I'm looking for in terms of the backup center spot. Maybe that's a little bit more money and that they want to invest in that position, already investing in Walker Kessler. But after that, I think you get in some really tough, they're usually like really young guys who haven't really proved it or just not consistent. So I'd love to get a two-headed center kind of monster there. I know, again, that's tough to do in a one offseason maybe, or you know maybe they fix that at the deadline. I'm hoping that's something, Pete, that... there's a consolidation trade coming. I think they have 16 guys signed where someone's going to have to be waived or moved. So that's what I'm looking for. Like another maybe lob threat defensive guy where, to your point, if Kessler misses 15 games, which is very, I mean, it's of realistic.
Right? It's realistic, so, not even just possible. It's like that, probably going to happen at some point. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So if he misses 15 games, like, and you have Kevon Looney behind you, it's a really difficult situation. Looney also just completely different style of big than I'm talking about either. I think he fits the possession battle that you're talking about, offensive rebounds.
And he's strong like Kessler for sure, but he's not going to be that rim protector, no.
Rim protector, pick and roll pairing, right? Very slow, like doesn't roll hard, not a lob threat, like all things that are kind of anti what Luka wants to run with. I'd love, again, Gafford's kind of the name I come to. There's some other lob threats out there that maybe you can, I think Musa Diabate is another name that, you know, possibly, I think he's got 1 year left in Charlotte, but that's the kind of guys I'm looking for.
I'm right there with you on the lob threat. It's funny because before the offseason, I was like, you know, I think a lob threat next to Luka it's a little bit overrated. People talk about it all the time, but you know, Luka can make a lot of those guys look good and look like lob threats, but that can be taken away in the playoffs. And apparently the Lakers felt the same way. And now I'm like, we don't have much in the way of lob threats and five spot. Like, be careful what you wish for, right? So I'm with you there. And God, I would love to get Diabate. And Gapper would be great too. It's just the money that he makes. It's like, I think they'd have to pick between that starting forward or paying a guy like Gafford, what does he make, like $17 million or something like that? I think it's hard to make the money work, but from an on-court fit, like that would be a phenomenal rotation at the five spot. But Raj, this has been fun as always, always super informative. Make sure you guys listen to him over on Lakers Detailed. Check him out on Silver Spoon and Roll and Offside. And Darius is going to be back tomorrow, so he and I have a lot of catching up to do. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal! Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one, miss it. Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.